As I have mentioned before, when Padmasambhava came to Tibet, before he began to teach the people Dharma, he taught for many years Dharma to the elemental beings and spirits and denizens, the invisible denizens of the land. In other words, he made alliances and friendships and communions with the environment itself, with the habitat, with the beings of the many different kinds of worlds that inhabit this world that we're in, before he, as a preparation, before he actually began to work with human beings. Now, why did he do that? He did that because human beings are not the the basic contact and the basic communication in that kind of Dharma work. Human beings are the final contact and the final communication, because much has to be prepared before human beings can understand at a heart level, because it is not a matter of simply transmitting words and codes and buzzwords and thoughts, because the transmission of the Dharma was a transmission of a flame, of a heart flame, and it was the planting of a seed, and the soil had to be prepared, as all soil does. It starts with hard clods that have to be ground up and crushed and have to be given fertilizer and so on, and has to be mixed with the soil before the soil can really receive and nourish those seeds. So to fling those seeds forward into a sterile environment and an uncomprehending one, and really an ignorant environment, a place of darkness, and a place of no real nurture, would have been a fruitless thing for Padmasambhava to do. So Padmasambhava began by preparing the field, preparing the ground, preparing the environment and the habitat, because he knew that he would have opposition. He would have much opposition, invisible opposition. The old Bon religion had made its alliances with many of the dark forces and also many of the powerful forces, and many of the really not either one way or another way sort of moral forces, but just the forces, that powers that were, that existed there. And Padmasambhava had first to work with Dakinis, with great beings who had power there. And in so doing, which was not an easy task, he was attacked. He had to be able to survive attack. He had to be able to deal with not just psychic attack, but noetic attack. He had to deal with various kinds of rebuttal and refusal that were not intellectual, but that were natural. He had to deal with the hostility of those that inhabited the areas and the lands. And he won over many of them, not all of them, but many of them, and many of the elemental beings and many of the others joined him, and so on. Now, when he preached Dharma to a great elemental being, such as the god of death, which is a mythical way of describing a great initiatory experience that and trial that Padmasambhava went through. When he preached Dharma to the god of death, as the god of death is understood in the old Bon religion and the mythology of that area, who was then converted to Dharma and became the great Dharma protector, for example, Padmasambhava did not have to sit and talk with long discourses and deliver long intellectual things and explain things in great detail. We communicate with elemental beings and elemental spirits and invisible beings, not with the words and languages that we have, but with thought. I don't want to say thought forms, because that's not really quite correct. A thought form is really, in some traditions, it's called an elemental, and all elementals are, in a sense, like thought forms that lack the higher principles. But communication is made in a telepathic way, in which meaning and consciousness is communicated, and it can be communicated instantly. It's communicated just the way light is communicated instantaneously, with a flash, with a radiance, with a so on. when various kinds of lower astral and other kinds of beings saw the Master Jesus approaching, they immediately knew who he was. They didn't have to be given any theology. They didn't have to be given any name or anything else. They simply said, "Whoa, there it comes." And that's the same way it is. That kind of communication is the same way that communication happens in those ways. So therefore, Padmasambhava, to preach Dharma, did not really spend a lot of time speaking, although he spoke words. He might have spent time singing. He might have spent some time intoning things. He might have spent some time drawing things in the sand. He may have spent much time in meditation and other kinds of things. But he basically was being, and through being one communicates. And when one then directs that communication, it becomes powerful. Now, we in our lives, are a combination of attention and inattention. We're like a leavened loaf of bread. We have a lot of spaces in us. We have a lot of vacuity, a lot of emptiness. There are times when we are very dense and our reality and our consciousness is very dense and very powerful. And there are times when it's very vacuous and it's very it's filled with a lot of, you might call, space. It's not really space, it's inattention. And there are times when we're very focused and we're very real, and there are times when we're not very focused and we're very rather unreal. One of the great gimmicks and tricks of mastery is to stay real, to stay focused in and grounded in this physical body, in this personal mind, and bring into it the higher nature. The way that's expressed in the philosophy, for example, of Spiros Sathos, the old man and his student Kostas on the island of Cyprus, is through their doctrine of the psychonoetic bodies, which they describe, which are other ways of speaking about what the Tibetans call the body of radiance, what the Buddhists call the body of radiance, and the body of the Agoides, or the body of the higher self, or the monadic self, which is described is in the average person as sort of an undifferentiated blob of light centered somewhere around the heart. And the goal is for that blob of light to become form, to form the psychonoetic body until it finally becomes one and the same with one's physical form and one's astral body, one's astral form. That is known in Agni Yoga as the densification of the astral body. And that is another way of saying that is that of bringing into, totally incarnate into flesh, all the higher principles, totally into flesh. And that's the goal of spiritual striving on the earth, is not to get out of the earth, to get away from the earth, but to bring into your earth all seven of the principles, the higher principles, and making them active. And when that happens, then all the bodies become congruent to each other. And in the process of that occurring, then as you know, the seven levels of or planes of existence that we spoke about have each seven subplanes, and each of those subplanes have seven subplanes, and it divides much further than that. And in the physical earth realm, the earth matter that our bodies are made of have, on a simple level, seven different, what might in some traditions called vibratory rates or vibrations that physical matter can have. And to bring the physical matter up to its highest vibration, its highest earth vibration, to bring the physical water, to bring the physical earth and the physical air to its highest vibration, and then to bring the four subtle ethers that are part of the physical world, which are yet invisible to people, the chemical ether, the vital ether, the luminous ether, and the reflective ethers, to bring those into their highest vibrations, is that's another way of saying one achieves the chemical marriage. One achieves the goal of mastery, to walk as a master on the earth in a physical body that has been made into a sacrament that is a powerful tool, both a sacrificial and a benedictive tool for all evolution and so on. Well, the shaping or forming of the psychonoetic body, or the densification of the astral and the higher bodies, and bringing them all into this is the making of ourselves fully present and fully conscious and densely real. It's like we're a combination of holes and matter, and somehow we want to condense and squeeze out all the air and all the holes and everything else until we become totally dense like a neutron star. And that is what we do in spiritual growth and development as we develop ourselves in these bodies. And when we become that way, we become extremely radiant on the unseen levels. And that is the kind of being that Padmasambhava had when he went into to preach the Dharma. And that is how the Dharma was preached. It was preached through his beingness, but directed and controlled in certain ways. And he was tested and challenged in many ways. And in the process of the testings and the challengings, he himself suffered certain things and became more perfect. The reason I mentioned this is because it is absolutely necessary when we come into any kind of new space, and it can be physical space, it can be intellectual space, and so on, for us to stop and get to know and make friends, alliances with that space by being fully present. I had a call, you might remember, Michael from last year, who was here a few times, but then didn't come, and he was connected with Kathera and these people over here. A nice fellow with on his own path with his own tens of occult knowledge and things. He called me in rather with a lot of anxiety in his voice about a week ago and wanted me to call him back, and I called him as soon as I was able to return the call. And he had moved very recently into a house in a sort of wooded area that he was told, people said, had ghosts, and it was on an Indian burial ground, and this and that and that and this, and he gave me all kinds of concrete examples of how he felt he was under psychic attack, and went through many details. The dogs were always howling, and this and that, and feelings he had, and so on, and how he had done this certain kinds of work that he knew how to do, banishing pentagrams and all kinds of other things, but he felt like he wasn't quite getting it all right. So he wondered if I had any advice. Well, the first advice I gave him is don't go into that space as an adversary. Don't walk into that space as an adversary. Don't see a haunted house as a fearful thing. Don't see the inhabitants of that area, the beings that exist there, as potential enemies. This is the terrible mistake that humanity make. The pilgrims, the Puritans, that we're supposed to, in schools, we're supposed to tell the children about the pilgrims and Thanksgiving and what a wonderful thing they were. But the pilgrims were really a rather noxious crew of people. They were religious fundamentalists who believed that that this new land they were going to was inhabited, that all places that were of wilderness were inhabited by devil and demons, and they had to go in there and subdue them, and they had to carve out themselves and protect them from the demons, and they went in with this bristling defensive attitude. And it's precisely this attitude that has alienated humanity from nature and nature from humanity. And the alienation is twofold. It's quite mutual. When these two hurricanes we've just seen and the tremendous damage they've inflicted is just one example of the tremendous negativity that exists between human beings and the elementals of air. And the air has been polluted, and the air has been dishonored, and it's been filled with noxious sounds, and it's all kinds of things. And what Michael was doing was making the mistake of moving into a place and feeling like he had to spray psychic disinfectant all over, spiritual disinfectants to kill or get rid of all the bad guys. Instead of introducing himself, saying, "Hi, I'm so-and-so. I'm going to live here now," and feeding the birds, putting out breadcrumbs for the birds, making his friends as well as he could with the dogs in the neighborhood, not being afraid of whatever he saw out of the corner of his eye, and when he felt the presence of things around, instead of reacting to it with a negative way, to open himself up and find a way of communicating and so on. That doesn't mean there aren't dark forces. There certainly are. And it doesn't mean there's no such thing as psychic attack. But my God, Jesus said, do your best to make friends with everybody. I've forgotten the exact way it was put in the King James, but it was something to the effect that make your best and last effort to keep peace with everyone and everything. And he was speaking not just of human beings. He was speaking of all kinds of beings. Because when your enemy gets you and sends you to prison, he'll stick you in there and you'll have to pay the very last penny. And it is very important to make all the alliances and the friendships you can and the connections and the communions that you can in your environment in a harmonious and friendly way as possible. And then after that, there will be those that you will have to then adopt a different attitude towards. But the first step is always, as they say, the Lord God, Jehovah, is slow to anger. And you must be slow to make enemies and slow to have fear and slow to all this sort of thing. So my biggest advice to him was just first to change his attitude about this whole thing and not go at it as though he's, you know, fighting the demons. But then I gave him other advice too, which is very important about how to protect his body when he's soft and things like that. And those are things that we've covered in the first empowerment. But how does one make a reconciliation and a friendship of the spirits of nature and the elementals of nature? How does one start to introduce oneself to these, and how does one start to be with these? Well, the first introduction we all had was the gematheae that I gave you, the stones that I had you wear. Where? Over your hearts. That is the place where you connect in your energy field. That is the place where you are the highest. And when you hold anything, the means of blessing, of imparting a blessing, and we are human beings. We are the intermediaries of blessing from the higher worlds into the lower worlds. We can mediate blessing. And when you hold this water over my heart, and I simply speak or hum or make any kind of a throat effort and visualize golden blessing through this water, this raises the vibration. It makes the little beings that participate in this. Now we've got to understand what we're talking about when we talk about water spirits and undines and things like this, because it's very hard to visualize physically. But it makes them very happy. It's like getting a back rub. It's just like getting a blessing. It's a wonderful thing. And these poor little creatures don't have higher principles, you know. They don't have a divine soul. They don't have an immortal soul. They are yet developing. In other worlds, in other rounds, they will become human beings. Well, you say, where are they? Here's the water. Here I see this bunch of water. Where is it differentiated? What's in there? How can I say there's something in here? Well, this is a very hard thing to do when one, you can't say, well, I can see a point with no dimensions. I can see a line with one dimension. I can see a plane with two dimensions. I can see space with three dimensions. Where the hell is the fourth dimension? I can't see it. I can't visualize it. I can't model it. Well, that's because the way of modeling it goes beyond the ever-failing paradigm you're using to visualize it. But I'm telling you that right here in this water, which is blessed, live and you can communicate with various kinds of beings. And they're not just, it's not just a whole species of beings. It's various kinds of genuses of beings and very specific ones, individuals. But we can't see them. We can't say, hi, George, hi, Fred, or anything like this. But believe it or not, they're very specific individuals are here. and they have a history. These particular ones came from beneath my home to the well. And you say, well, how many are there? How are they differentiated? How can you do this? Well, this is a, you can visualize, if I were to visualize that way, if I were to say how many, to visualize it physically, I were to say how many bacteria might be here, or how many things. There are certain specific bacteria, ones that have certain history, and they live there. Well, in the same way, there are other inhabitants of this water, and they are not inhabiting in the water. The water is in them, but it's in another dimension, and you can't see the dimension with your eyes of flesh. But there are specific beings right here in this water, in this wine. And when you hold this to your heart, it imparts a great blessing to them. It's like just making them feel really good. And when you do that, you can do that in a thousand ways. The Master Ivanhoe says, when you get up in the morning, you go out in the woods and you speak to everything, just like little old ladies talk to their plants. You just go out and you say, ah, trees, you look so beautiful today. Gosh, you are so noble and your colors are so gorgeous and I appreciate it so much. It doesn't matter what you say. I mean, if it's from your heart, it doesn't matter. You can say all things you want, and if you're not feeling it and don't really mean it, it doesn't mean diddly in the unseen worlds. But in the unseen worlds, the impulse of the heart. And you have to open yourself up in order to feel gratitude, and you have to open up yourself in order to feel bliss. You can't just walk around and expect it to hit you like a hammer. You look at the trees. You really look at them. You look at the flowers. You go and smell a flower. You look at it. You appreciate it. You finally come to the point where you start to identify with it, where you start to be the flower, and that's when the blessing comes, and that's when the communion comes, and that's when the connection comes. In order to reconcile yourself with nature, you have to be nature, you have to become nature, you have to allow your consciousness to flow into it and include that as part of the I. Now, we spoke for, we don't command nature spirits and elementals. They are, elementals are under the organizing principles of what we call devas, or other, there are other names for these kinds of beings. We are not the devas that organize them. That's a very complex thing. That would be like with my body trying to control every heartbeat. That would be a bad mistake to try to work on that. The devas are in control. But you make friendship with the elementals, and of course with the devas. You make them. You make it by identification. And when you do that, they then work for you and with you in the goodwill that you bring. And ways of reconciling yourself and creating friendship and alliances and communions with nature, nature spirits, one of the ways that we showed before was in the blessing walk, where as one walks upon the earth, then one has a sense of blessing that comes out of the palms of the hands and out of the soles of the feet, and you leave the blessing on the earth as you walk over it. And then whatever you see, out of your eyes a blessing comes. Everything you look at, and you visualize this as a golden color. And you leave golden behind, it comes out of your hands, it radiates, and it comes, it all streams forth from your heart, comes down through the crown. And you look at the sky, you look at the trees, you look at the road, everything you look at with blessing. When you become a very highly realized being, you will not have any other way of looking at things. Everything you look at, you won't feel critical about anything. You can look at a murderer with a bloody knife in his hand with blessing. And that's a divine attitude, a divine posture. You honor mineral and plant and animal and human lives. You can do it like the little old lady talking to her plants, but you can do it in other ways, mostly by appreciating and really loving, getting to look at and really appreciate it all the time. Wherever you go, look at stones and pick them up and feel them in your hands and appreciate them, appreciate the soil, the earth, the water, the things that you see, the things that you smell in nature. You commune with the same. You can identify with the same. It is possible to sit in meditation when you're in nature. Don't sit in meditation and try to go deep within and try to exclude everything without. Instead, when you're in nature, try to come out of yourself and be that which is in nature. Be a tree, commune with a tree, commune with an animal, commune with something like this. with a cloud and cooperate with the same. For example, the things that you take into you, like your food, there are very few things that you take right inside yourself, inside your aura, freely and willingly. Food and drink are one of the things you take in, and perceptions are the other things you take in. Sound and things you see with eyes and thought forms that are sent to you that you receive and take on, and feelings and emotions that are sent toward you that you receive and take on. All this you take inside yourself, and you then have to eat it. You have to metabolize it. You have to deal with the consequences. If you make the mistake of taking something poisonous into you, you have to metabolize your way through it. If you shoot it into your veins, you can't vomit it out. Well, it's the same with perceptions. So therefore, when you eat your food, it is very important. I mentioned before that when you eat, that the crown chakra opens. That is, when we say a chakra opens, we mean that it becomes super sensitive. When we say a chakra opens, what we mean is that it becomes a very active transmitter and receiver of the energy, of the etheric energy that it mediates, of the various levels of the etheric energy that mediates, and that which the etheric energy brings through, because the chakras are basically parts of the etheric body that mediate to parts of other invisible bodies that are part of your own self. Now, when you eat, the crown chakra becomes very, very enlivened. It becomes very open. And therefore, it's very bad to eat with bad feelings, negativity, bickering, that kind of stuff. It's very important to build a consciousness of the divine and of the higher nature when one eats. And the point of a grace is not to thank God for giving you food. That's not really quite what it's all about. It's rather to put the mind in tune with the highest, so that that which you take into yourself will carry the finest and most beautiful vibrations and will work with you in a harmonious way, not to harm you, but to make you better, so that you yourself can give out to the world in the energy that you've been gifted with, because you are given vital energy. The only reason that you can make a step is because it's a gift. It's the grace of vital energy that you are given to do this with. And when you get more advanced, when we all get more advanced in the temple, we will be given gifts of various kinds of etheric energy that will enable us to do certain things and create certain phenomena. And those are gifts. That is something we're entrusted with for a purpose, not just for show, not for this, not for anything else, but for certain purposes. Well, when you take in your food, then it's very important to see that as a time of giving and receiving blessing. And this is what Eucharist is. This is what the Eucharist is. The idiom is to receive. Is to return grace. That means that when we take it in, we're also giving something out, we're radiating something out. That what we take in for ourselves, we take in for all, and we're radiating it out. The grace that I say at my table with my children is, O eternal Lord of life, we give thee thanks for all things, not just for this food, and we send forth thy holy blessing unto all, and then I mean whatever the all the things are, and we bless this food. And we bless this food because, what does that mean, we bless this food? This is very powerful. To bless something is to put the divine energy of evolutionary transmutation and of benediction, attach it onto the etheric vibration of something. And we have the power to do that, and much more power than normal people because of the priesthood that we share. And so when we bless the food, when I bless the water, before you take anything into yourself, bless it, not just to protect yourself. Don't see it as a prophylactic device just to protect yourself, but by blessing, what you bring into yourself, it enables you to radiate out and be of service. Without it, you can't. Without that empowerment, you cannot serve in the world. You cannot be effective as a server in the world. You can have all the good intentions you want, but if you don't have that empowerment. So you have to be responsible for processing, spiritually processing that which comes into you. That's part of purity practices. So blessing the food is a way of blessing the earth and giving a blessing upon the food that you take into your body, which then becomes part of you. It is a blessing. It's a sacred process. Blessing the water, blessing the watery substances, the things that you take in that way, the water that you swim in, the water that you bathe in and shower in, sight and sound blessing. These are all the etheric energies and all the fiery forces, things that you receive through sight and sound have fluid and fiery elements and elementals with them, and the blessing with the breath, with the air. So that which you breathe, to bless that which you breathe in, and to put a blessing in.